I've had AA nickel metal hydride batteries and lithium batteries fail on me.
Yeah, but, you know, I give you just a simple example. Ava Grundy AM stereo, AM FM stereo, shortwave radio, very small, in pocket size. You put two AA batteries in it, and it'll play for 6 months.
Maybe in your radio, or maybe you only use it for 10 minutes a month.
I guess, but, you know, I have to charge my cell phone every day.
You're comparing oranges and apples here. When you turn off the radio, your battery draw is 0.000000. When you turn off your cell phone, you may notice your cell phone does not have a toggle switch. It draws current even when you think it's totally dead.
Bantamix again.
Wesley?
No, I just have a question to Dr. Roy. Will the next week we have a chance to respond to my set of questions? And to exchange.
Yes, Wesley, I'm terribly sorry. We will definitely get to your question next Sunday.
The discussion is absolutely fantastic. I'm very much satisfied with participation in today's session. It's vibrant and it brings attention of the people. The thing is that I would like to understand if the question is being given at 8 p.m., would that question have a chance to be answered before the space report? And to exchange.
Well, Wesley, that's my plan. I mean, the world may blow up. You never quite know. But I will try my best to make sure that we discuss your topic next Sunday. And I'm sorry that it kind of slid off the schedule, but I did not expect the car topic to require this much conversation.
Thank you very much. And thanks, you.
KG2RY, Ed.
Right here.
Well, you know, I had a battery pack, and the battery pack went down to zero, doesn't work anymore. So I decided that I would charge the phone with two AA batteries, lithium batteries, you know, and a holder, you know, that contains them, you know. Why am I going back to old technology for this thing?
Talking about lithium batteries, they're not old technology.
Yeah, but, you know, you don't find too many things and too many devices that run on AA batteries. They mostly have, they contain a battery inside.
I used to have an ICOM IC8 some suffix, I forget what it was, that ran off of AA batteries. I had it for years and years until it's just plain mechanically wore out, and I bought this one. And this is the ICB80 and is not available with a AA battery option, which really irritated me because I love that.
I think it was last year, more than a year ago, I bought an Apple TrackPad 2. Apple TrackPad 2 has a built-in battery, you know, and you have to charge it. And now I have to charge it maybe once a week, once every week and a half. And I tried to figure out if I could put a new battery in it, and the instructions show that the only thing that's holding the bottom part of the trackpad to the other part of it was just a bunch of tape.
Interesting story, but I'm not sure what that has to do with. But let me give you something about AA and AAA batteries. I am a Boy Scout leader. I often go for a week of summit camp. So we're out there, and, you know, Boy Scouts especially in summer camp, need flashlights. And if I'm the leader, I bring a pile of AA and AAA batteries with me, because the Boy Scouts never think to put fresh batteries in their flashlights before they go camping for a week. So I stock up with AAs and AAAs, and I never come home the same number I left with.
Hey, do you ever take a radio out there when you go camping, show those young men how to construct a simple wire antenna and to make contacts with a radio?
All right. Item one, there's a lot of young women there now. This is 2022. They've gone co-ed. Item two, yes, and I have been universally disappointed. They do not see any benefit over what is on their smartphone, and nothing anyone can say will change their minds. But yeah, been there, done that, and it wasn't pretty.
QSL makes me think of this guy who went to the top of a mountain, and he constructed a maybe like a 7 to 9 element 2 meter antenna, which appeared to be vertical, but, you know, that was only in the video. And he made contact after contact after contact on 2 meter sideband. So I don't know. Maybe he had some kind of approach to it.
Oh, mountaintopping VHF is actually very popular. Yeah, it's exactly what you do, and if you're working on the Simplex band, you can rack them up. Just about everybody who wants to be on 2 meter Simplex, just, you know, you're like Rad DX to them. If you're up on top of a mountain, you get fantastic range, particularly with a nice, you know, highly directional antenna. Yeah, yeah. I would say about every 3 years, QST has a picture on the cover of somebody doing exactly that.
Yes, and don't forget to bring a battery fully charged.
Yeah, yeah, there are no AC outlets on mountaintops.
QSL, I think we pass it along to Dr. Roy, see what he wants to do. It's 10:17 p.m. on my... I'll just say, what do they call that when the time is coordinated? This is KG2RY.
Coordinated Universal Time. Roy, I have a question before I give it to you.
Certainly, Ed.
I forget who originally had the battery question, but never got a chance to hear if he liked my suggestion to determine if it's a leak or, you know, a leak is kind of a bad battery, park it overnight with the battery terminal disconnected. I never did any feedback.
Okay, that was Rich, W2BZ. Rich, if you hear me, can you give the feedback to Ed?
Ed, please ask that one more time, Ed.
I never got your response when I said a nice simple test to see if that car has a bad battery or a sneak leakage path is one day when you're not going to need the car till the next day, disconnect one of the battery terminals, leave it disconnected. In the morning, reconnect it. If the car starts, it's a sneak path. If the car doesn't start, it's a dead, you know, the battery needs replacement.
So I'm going to disconnect it tonight. And the only thing that's confusing me and why I asked the question in the first place is the car started for 3 weeks straight. After I had this problem, it started for 3 weeks straight. Now I have the problem again. And the only thing that was different is I charged the battery when I had the problem initially, and then it ran fine for 3 weeks. I can't imagine it took 3 weeks to discharge the battery, but I'll experiment with it. I guess, you know, it sounds like hopefully that'll be it. If not, gotta look elsewhere. Process of elimination, I guess. So... I don't want to take up too much time away from Paul, so 73 guys, and thanks all. I'm going to try everything you guys have mentioned, and it's probably the battery. I'll report back next week.
K2SDP, quick. I believe the fellow with the problem, Rich. Rich, I have a, it's K2STP, Chris. I have a battery tester, a load tester that's really good, and if you bring that thing over here, I'll test it in about 10 seconds and tell you if the batteries are any good or not. You're welcome to look me up on QRZ, and you're welcome anytime. Good luck. K2STP.
Thank you for that. Are you in Nassau or Suffolk or Queens?
I am in Brookhaven, Bellport area, South Shore, Suffolk County.
I might very well do that. Just give me a call sort of slowly again.
You got it. It's Kilo 2 STP. Kilo 2 STP, like the STP oil from years ago.
Got it. Much appreciated.
And one last thought. Harbor Freight Tools sells a digital voltmeter for somewhere around $6 that I highly recommend. It's a fantastic diagnostic tool for batteries to make sure that when the engine's running, battery has about 14 volts or so across it. With that, I think we are done. Now let me turn it over to Roy, who can then add it over to Paul, I guess. WV280.
I just want to add something before Ed, you leave WHCDL.
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just going on into the background.
Okay, well, I have it in mind because I keep forgetting. This may be a topic that you and I could discuss, but I got to do further research on it. I was reading an article last week about communications between submarines and how, and you understand this, radio waves at higher frequencies do not go through water very well. And so they have trouble communicating when they're below the surface of water. They have to come up to the surface to communicate. But now there's a technique, there's a way that they've overcome that using a digital technique. I have to look again at the article, where digital data is going to the surface of the water and is able to now be relayed to another submarine from going through the, like an acoustical wave on the surface of the water from one submarine to the next, so they don't have to surface, they don't have to come up from where they're located to communicate. Have you read about this, and this is something new?
I haven't read about it. I understand what you're saying. I'm 99% certain I know exactly where you're going with this, but we don't have time for this now. To thoroughly cover this, we would need somewhere between half an hour and 2 hours, and we don't have either one.
For future reference.
Oh, yeah, you're on.
I just wanted to know. Thanks. Roy, over to you. Sorry to break in. I wanted to mention that.
Okay, very good. I just want to thank Ed for answering Rich's question and all the other people who chimed in. A word of warning, and I think Ed covered it as well. I know one person who took his battery out, and he couldn't get his gas emissions check to work because he had to drive all over the place and have the computer retrain itself. So keep that in mind. There are some cars that really like to have their battery on at all times to keep their memory of the programming algorithms and self-checks that they make. Also, I wanted to agree with Ed that, kids aren't fascinated by radio waves. Unfortunately, they're jaded. They all have cell phones that can talk to Japan or any place in seconds. They don't have to worry about propagation conditions or anything. I mean, Usually what I end up trying at the very last straw is Moon Bounce. And, you know, some people, some younger people are slightly interested in that and others aren't. So that's unfortunately, our Zoomers are kind of jaded about RF, unfortunately. Anyway, once again, I want to thank everyone. It's 10:25. It's time for Paul with the SpaceNet report.
AC2GSWS plan. Okay, Roy, very good. Great topic. And looking forward to next week when we come up with the new topic, with one that Wesley has, and now the submarine topic that Andy's talking about. We'll be here for that as well. Anyway, in the launches and landing category, there is a landing or a splashdown coming tomorrow. Looking forward to see how Axiom 1 does. Axiom 1 was a crew of four that went up, and their plan was to go into space for 10 days, spend 8 days on the International Space Station, and, you know, the other days would just travel. But now, because of the bad weather or high winds and down in Florida, they've waved off quite a few days. So now they've spent like a total of 12 days on the International Space Station. So they got an extra 4 days out of it. This crew paid around $55 million each to do this. Naturally, they have a whole bunch of money, and someday, of course, in the future, the prices will start to drop. But, you know, they have to start somewhere. There's been commercial flights that have gone to the space station before through the Soyuz Russian program. They've sent nine people. One person actually went up twice, so there's been nine flights. You know, so you have these characters that have done this over the years and pay big money to go to the space station. But now NASA is going to start doing it as well. They plan on doing future missions like that. The called Axiom is the company that's totally into this. Four people now. They'll have another four people on the next flight. And between that flight and the third flight, they plan on actually attaching a module to the front end of the International Space Station. You know, they'll have to remove the pressure mating adapter that's there now, number two. Temporarily remove that, install a big module, and maybe put the adapter back in front of the new module. And eventually they plan on putting other modules. And this is all going to be private money, Axiom. So, years from now, when the International Space Station is done and they plan on deorbiting it, these new modules will separate from the space station and become their own independent commercial space station. So anyway, they're going to be landing, and now, you know, they finally got decent weather. The waves have calmed down in Florida, and they'll be coming down tomorrow. I think 1:30, probably, I think 1:06, I think I wrote down here, 1:06 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, SpaceX has their own ship out there. They actually have two ships, one in the Atlantic and one in the Gulf of Mexico. Depending on which one has better weather, they'll do a splashdown and pick up these four space travelers. The commander, he's been up, you know, four or five different times. He's a retired NASA astronaut, and he's now working for Axiom. And he's the only one that's been up there before the other three people I knew. So once they come down and land, that gives NASA the okay. They'll usually wait around 2 days to launch a new crew that's been scheduled to go up, but they, you know, because of this delay, that schedule, you know, those are, that crew should have gone up, you know, a few days ago, and that's called a Crew 4 mission, again being launched by SpaceX.
Paul?
What's up? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know what's causing it, but the Echolink audio dropped out again. Sometimes when I come on, it kind of resets, but it didn't reset yet. Maybe if you give it, about an extra 15 seconds, maybe that'll knock it back into life. We'll see.
Fine business. We'll stand by 15 seconds. Not a problem. WS2N. QRX.
Okay, the timeout cleared with my transmission, so you're good.
Okay, you have the lucky push the talk button. Very good. Anyway, the crew that's going up will launch on Wednesday, the 27th, in the middle of the night. You know, 3:52 in the morning. So it'll be a night flight. And when they go up, because that's an NASA flight, that crew will stay there for another 6 months. That's standard procedure now. So a lot of comings and goings on the International Space Station. Let me drop it for any comments or questions.
KG2RY, good evening.
Yes, David, go ahead.
Do you know about service, the internet service called Starlink, owned by the same person, owned the SpaceX?
Oh, sure, Dave. Yeah, we've talked about him quite a bit. Elon Musk is behind Starlink. In fact, he just had another flight go up Thursday, and he brings up around 50 satellites at a time. Last Thursday it was 53 satellites, and he brings them up to a low Earth orbit. You know, the idea is to once they're in low Earth orbit, they have engines on. Each one has their own engine. Got an ion engine run. You know, they load it up with krypton gas. And they use that gas for the ion engine. Most ion engines they use, they'll use neon gas, but it's a lot less expensive, cheaper to run krypton. And they, you know, they fire those engines up, and after about a couple of weeks, they eventually get to the orbital operational altitude, which is, he's looking at around 300 miles for thousands of satellites. He's got over 2,000 operational satellites now. He's probably sent up 2,300 or so satellites. And so, you know, a couple of hundred have actually failed or have not made it to orbit for one reason or another. But he's got over 2,000 now. He's got it operational. His goal is to complete the main initial goal. He needs around 4,000 satellites. But he's got a deal with the government to eventually put up 40,000 satellites. So, and it's really some project. Each satellite, like he launches roughly 50 at a time, weighs around 500 pounds. Each one has its own solar panels, and those solar panels drive enough power to put not only communications to make the thing work, but also to drive the ion engine. And he does have some competition. Amazon, owned by Jeff Bezos, plans on launching the Krypton what is it, the Kepler, the Kepler satellites, which will be eventually be around 3,000 satellites. He doesn't have any up there yet. Company does have another company called OneWeb has about, I guess, around 300 satellites up there now, and his goal is to put around 600 or 700 up there. But eventually, it will be a low latency, all of these will be low latency broadband systems where you could hook up a station to your house. Really good, especially if you're in the middle of nowhere and you don't have any, a cable, or, you could hook up this system and you'll be able to have, a computer. You really won't have cell phone. You probably have voice over IP, of course, but you won't have your cell phone. Although there is a company working on that as well. Elon Musk owns SpaceX, Tesla, Starlink. He also owns Sun City, the solar panel company. Back to you, Dave. WS2S.
KG2RY. QSL, Paul, thank you very much for the information. I'm not sure about cell phone service, but I do know that my phone, I can select a function called Wi-Fi calling. So whatever the speed of my Wi-Fi is, it will have some effect on the quality of the voice signal. And I'm not sure if that's quite enough, but we'll see. Go ahead.
Yeah, right now Elon Musk does not have a plan on having regular cell phones communicate with the satellites. But there is another company that is working on it. I forget the name of that one. But I think that's still quite a few years away. But people, they would be happy if you have good, solid computer contact as well as TV. They'll be able to beam down all your TV stations just like you get on cable. And he's going to have the bandwidth to go all the way up to 8K. So he's setting himself up for our future capabilities. But, it's kind of expensive from what I see. You started off with, $499, and that would give you, a station at home, which would include a phased array antenna. It has to be able to track the satellites, so this phased array system, which I think is about 2 feet in diameter or something. And your box itself, $499, and then I think they said $99. Well, now those numbers have gone up, $99 a month, and then those numbers have already gone up. I think he's in the $700 range for the station, and I forget what number he's gone up for a monthly fee. So already this is getting expensive. That's what they want to do. I mean, he doesn't want to stop there either, Elon Musk, anyway. His dream is to colonize Mars, and eventually he wants to put thousands of these same satellites around Mars to communicate. You can imagine a whole globe of people on Mars communicating using these satellites. That's his long-term plan. I don't think he's going to live long enough to see that. But we'll see. Any other questions, Dave?
Well, I think in his mind, he might be thinking that this world is spent, so I have to go somewhere else, And to take all the comforts of home up to that place, wherever it is. No, I don't have any more questions. It's very nice to hear you talk about this, and I say have a great night, KG2RY.
Okay, Dave, thanks for the question. And we'll see what happens in the future. Anyway, talking about the future, NASA has plans for the 2030s. Every 10 years they have this decadal plan that comes out, and now they're working on this other one. It's not complete yet, but one of their goals is to investigate Uranus. They would like to have a spacecraft go out to that planet and orbit it. It's only been photographed a couple times up close by Voyager 2 back in the 1980s. And they would like to really investigate that particular planet and its moons. You have Miranda, and I think there's they found up to 20 different moons for that planet. And that's the one that's tipped on its side. Its pole, it's often South Pole, is actually pointing toward the sun. So it's almost, not quite, but it's kind of like a 90-degree deal. So it spins in that fashion. So you always have one pole facing the sun at all times. And the scientists would love to get a lot of information about that particular planet. And that's just one idea that they have going. That'll be their flagship mission for the 2030s. But then they also plan on sending a lander to another moon in the Saturn system called Enceladus. They plan on sending an orbiter and a lander to Enceladus. They'd love to investigate that particular moon. It's one of these moons that they feel is a whole globe filled with water underneath. It's covered with ice. But they know from experience from the Cassini mission that orbited Saturn for, I think, 14 years. Some of the passes that Cassini made near Enceladus was they photographed, and they have detectors on board the spacecraft, and they could detect streams of water coming up hundreds of miles into space. So they know this happens on a regular basis with that moon. So they would like give anything to send an orbiter there to investigate that more. They'd like to analyze it to the point where, to see if there's any organics in that water. Because under the ice, they theorize that, you could actually have life or some kind of life underneath that surface. Because, there's liquid water underneath that. And, of course, with that orbiter, they plan on sending a lander. So we'll see. NASA's getting ready. 10 years ago, they talked about the Mars sample return mission, which sounded very fantastic over 10 years ago that they could do that. But actually, they've already got step one done. Step one was to send the spacecraft to Mars. In this case, it was a rover called Perseverance, which is riding around on Mars right now. It looks for different rocks to drill into, and they core bore into these rocks, and they save these samples. This machine puts these samples into a test tube like gadget, highly sealed, and leaves it on the planet's surface. They know exactly where everyone is.
Go to frequency, old man.
And they plan on getting around 30 or so test tubes, and eventually a sample return mission will go to Mars and be able to bring it back. And then that's in the book. They're working on that right now. So, okay. Any comments, questions?
Can alter frequency, old man.
Nothing heard. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Just checking something. WS.
Got the frequency, old man.
Anybody copy any strange things? You know where to send it. We have an email for that. Okay, I was talking about a crew that's going up to the International Space Station, crew of four, and one of the experiments they plan on bringing with them is an experiment for macular degeneration. They plan on creating this this type of material that will eventually be sensitive enough to light, where they can take this stuff and actually implant it into somebody's eye. So let's say you're going blind, and which happens to a lot of us, depending on what you do in life. And even if you do nothing, even if you get old, you know, you might need this someday. And it might be, might pay on this to know about it. You might say to your doctor one day, you know, I heard they were working on something in 2022. By 2024, they were going to actually start testing this on patients. Macular degeneration gets to the point where you can virtually lose your eyesight. And there's two different types, the wet type and then the dry type. And apparently this system, whatever they're coming up with, will be able to help patients in the future. I thought that was good. They bring up, you know, hundreds of different experiments, and this one's called this material is standby. It's called a bacterial hodospin. I can't even imagine what this word is. BACTERIORHODOSPIN. And this stuff is going to be the light-sensitive material. Unfortunately, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know much about it. But I know somebody might know something about it. Any comments or questions?
Got the frequency, old man. Got the frequency, old man.
No comments. This is WS2N. Anybody have a call that they would like to say what your call is?
Anybody's out there, got the frequency, old man.
Nothing heard. Okay. I do hear QRM. Am I getting through? WS1.
Yeah, Paul, you're coming through. There's someone else doing something else. And, of course, there's EchoLink going in and out and in and out and in and out. So I don't have a clue of, right now it's working fine, but up until about a minute ago it wasn't. So, you know, there's some of that, some of this, some of the other thing. What can I tell you?
Got the frequency, old man. Old man, get off.
Okay, not good. Feel like I'm going back in time here. Well, we had multiple problems, but eventually that person went away forever. Anyway, there was a EVA done last week, and this one by the Russians. And as much as we have problems here on Earth with people in foreign lands, even locally, Russians and the Americans, U.S. and the European Space Agency are still getting along on the International Space Station. They always did, even when the Soviet Union was the Soviet Union. Back in 1974, we had Soyuz dock with the Apollo Soyuz docking mission. First time they did it, and we've been getting along in space ever since, which is a good thing. Anyway, they had an EVA last week to put into operation this 37-foot robotic arm. And that was for, you know, that, you know, we have a 57-foot arm that's counted around too. And that's been up there, you know, for decades, literally, since 2000. But now we have this other one that European Space Agency bought up to work the other end of the space station. And it's a 37-foot arm, and then they need to bring it to life. And the European Space Agency has gone along with Russia to do that. And now eventually they're going to have a couple more flights to do the same thing as well. So one of the people that are going up on these the Crew 4 mission that will be going up next week is Samantha Christopher Eddy from Italy. And that person has been trained to work in the Orlan cosmonaut suit. So she'll be working on that. They planned this originally because it is a European Space Agency robotic arm.
Delta frequency, Orlan. Orlan?
Nothing heard.
Okay.
A lot of noise, but nothing heard. Okay, so anyway, that's in the works. The EVA was successful, and I thought I'd bring that up, considering what's in the news lately. It's amazing that you have one particular experiment in space that you still have these people getting along. It's a civil organization. NASA is really civil. It's not military. And so is Roscosmos, as well as the European Space Agency. So that's why they're able to do it. Any comments? WS20.
Drop the frequency, old man.
Okay, just tired of noise. All right, that's about it. But now we'll turn it back to you, Roy. Tomorrow night we have the Club Net on these frequencies. We'll look into that, and like usual. And Roy, we'll turn it back to you. AC2GS, WS2.
Dr. Frequency, old man.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much. If you'd like to discuss for a couple of seconds that weird low-G experiment they're doing at the space station, it sort of makes no particular sense to me personally. But we can discuss it a little if you're so inclined.
Get off the frequency, old man.
Okay. Took them both those. I don't get this. Well, whatever. Apparently, they can only do it in space. If they tried on Earth to create this system of whatever these molecules are that they're going to put in people's eyes, gravity on Earth will not allow them to do it properly. According to what I was reading, if you have, like, you develop, like, any kind of a puddle of any kind, you're always going to have sediment on, you know, and located in one spot because of gravity. This makes it homogenized. It's equal when they develop it. But, you know, if this works, I mean, it would be great. And I had a relative that had this problem, and, you know, many years ago. And it's a serious problem. If they could ever, you know, nail that down and fix this, I think it would be great. So in space, they're going to be able to, they're going to try to develop this. They'll bring it back to Earth. Everything will be fine. It won't change whatever this stuff is. And then someday in the future, install it in somebody's retina. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, AC2GS, by the way, it's a fascinating subject. It's actually been done here on Earth. There was a report about 8-9 months ago. Basically, it implants a layer of photosensitive protein covering the retina. Then you have to wear a big set of goggles, and you need a camera. So the camera sees what things look like. They translate them into blocky, very, very low resolution, kind of orange colored lights that the photoactive material is sensitive to, and that gets shined into your eyes through the glasses and acts as an artificial retina, sort of. So they've done it on Earth. The question apparently is that it would be more effective if they could apply multiple layers of this material, and that under regular gravity that seems to be a limitation. So I'm not quite sure, but it almost sounds like they're expecting to put people into zero-G and apply this in multiple layers to their retina in order to improve the resolution quality. The question is, how the heck do you do that? I guess if you take one of these joyrides high enough, you'll be in low-G for the application or something. But I'm not quite sure. You might be right that it's just synthesizing the material in low-G, but it sounds like they're interested in uniform layers in the retina. And for that, you're going to need to take the eyeball up into low-G as well.
Okay. I got this from the NASA site, so we'll see. That means that they'll have a follow-up on it. And apparently they set it up for this experiment up to see if they could develop this, whatever this is, in space, which they did. But now they want to be able to set it up and see if they can do layer after layer after layer, multiple layers. They didn't say that. They would send a patient up there. So if that's what they're thinking, you know, there aren't too many 80-year-old people that they're going to do send up into space, except maybe Wally Funk from, she went up, she was in her 80s, and William Shatner, another guy. But I mean, outside of that, yeah, you're right, that doesn't sound like the way to go. But I'm assuming they don't have that much detail on it, but I'm assuming that they're trying to develop some kind of material to actually be implanted here on Earth. I didn't see anything about the goggles or anything like that. Maybe this is an advancement beyond that stage. Anyway, it's good to see that they're working on this. There's the wet type and the dry type. You don't want the wet type. The dry type, from what I understand, is more popular. More people have that. The wet type actually is a bunch of, little veins or whatever it is, the capillaries that cover the retina, and eventually they break and knock out your central vision. The dry type, it doesn't do that. But either way, it's all good.
Complete.
Back to you, Roy.
Okay, Paul. Also, it's designed to help people with something called retinitis pigmentosa, which affects a slightly younger population group. I think the study that I read about 8-9 months ago was a person with retinitis pigmentosa. And those people, unfortunately, can develop blindness in their 40s.
They did mention that in the article. They did mention that particular problem as well. So I guess it's going to help that group, too.
Yeah, it's a brave new world we're in.
Very good. Well, the space station has, over the years, thousands and thousands of different experiments from countless different companies. And this is just one of many. Like the last group that went up, this Axiom One group that's coming back tomorrow, one of the experiments that they worked on is trying to develop a lens or a mirror type of thing in space. The idea is to develop a big, in the long run, a large telescope, 10 times bigger than what we have now, hundreds of feet in diameter. And right now they have this thing that's maybe just the size of a quarter that they brought up with them. They're going to try to have this kind of fluid go around this ring and then create their own mirror. Of course, when they bring it back to Earth, it'll just collapse. The idea is, if this works, it could, you know, size it up larger and larger, and then someday eventually create this mirror in space that's, they said, cheaper and supposed to be better quality in the long run to what they could do today. So, I mean, there's all kinds of experiments. Back to you, Ron.
Yeah, we live in exciting times. There's a lot of development going on, and inflatable telescopes, that would be fun. Easier to do in zero gravity than down here on Earth, but yeah, the future is bold.
Certainly is. Very good, Roy. Anyway, we'll pass back to you. I'll fly clear for this evening, and we will be back here next week, as well as the week after, and the week after that, and the week after that, just like we've been here for, since, what, the 1980s or something. See you, Roy. We're not going away. AC2GSW, anyway.
Yes, indeed. We're not going anyplace. Anyway, thank you, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all you do for the technical net, and thank you for all that you do for the club. I want to thank everyone who participated tonight, especially Ed with his presentation. I appreciate it greatly. I appreciate all the people who participated, who asked questions, who answered questions, who made comments about the questions or the answers or what have you. It's all good. Once again, I want to remind people that if you want to contact me, my email address can be mailbag@ac2gs.com. My link page, which is up 24/7, is, you type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. There's a stream of the W2VL repeater 24/7. You can get that by typing into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And always keep in mind MyKC2NJI's wonderful archive of our technical nets going as far back as September 2006. That's located at his website, which is amateurradio.tv. He has over 1 million visitors, make it 1,000,001. So I want to thank you all for tonight, and I hope that you learned a few things and enjoyed yourself, and I hope you come back next Sunday. As Dick often ended his technical net, be kind to each other. That's always good advice. Things are looking up a little bit these days, but I don't want to give it a bit of a hurry, so just stay safe, be well. Take care of yourself, take care of your loved ones, take care of your hated ones, because we're all in this together. So, once again, thanks to everyone. Be well. See you next Sunday night at 8 p.m. This is AC2GS formally ending this edition of the Limark Technical Net, and I am clear.
Got a question for the fellow talking about the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. I didn't catch the call. WB2BXO here if you're still there.
That was Ed. I guess he's gone, Frank.
Echo Link is retransmitting me now. Yeah, I guess it's bedtime for many of us who have real jobs, unlike myself who's retiring and just putter around with a part-time business online. I'll bring it up next week if Ed's around. I was just wondering if he'd tried taking his kids out to locations where their cell phones don't work, where there's no signal, and then challenging them to communicate.
Hey, that sounds good, Frank.
Have a good night.
And I just taken somebody out,
I was in
showing him an
today.
Antenna. See, my voice is going to go through this antenna, pop out another antenna, even if you have two HDs. You know,
anyway,
fly through the air, go over there, and go, it's going to go from one box to the other box. Start with that, you know. Look at this. There's nothing there, but yet the voice or picture is going to pop up at the other end of the, you know, from one transmitter to, from the transmitter to the receiver. Start with that. Maybe that's always intrigued me.
Yeah, Echo Link was doing something weird, so we were doubling, and then I couldn't key it till the repeater dropped. So try that again if you're still there.
Okay, Frank, no, I was just saying it. Just taking two HTs out in the field, you know, your voice is going to go out of one antenna. It's going to go over to that antenna. There's nothing in between. You know, your voice, sometimes, you know, picture, whatever it is, you're transmitting. You know, you start with that. You know, don't forget about cell phones or anything like that. Bring two HTs. And of course, you know, graduate to a dipole or something, and then talk to, the idea is talking to somebody, you know, without paying $100 a month fee for cablevision or something. Or a telephone company, you know, telephone connection. I don't know. Like I said, that the physics behind that always intrigued me. WB2BXO, WS2N.
Yeah, the idea of not paying the cell phone company or the ISP, I would think would intrigue some of the kids. Anyway, I kind of get a kick out of making contacts on FT8 on what otherwise is a completely dead band. Even with a dipole, kind of like a taste of how the other half lives with big antennas.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't tried FT8. Got years ago, ready, Amtor. I always liked Amtor. Whatever happened to Amtor? That was great. And PSK-33. But that's where I left off, PSK-33. I'm going to sign with you, Frank. So, 673, I'll make this my final. WB2BXO, WS.
Yeah, well, you do sound tired, and I've got some things I want to do before I call it a night also. Had a long day, actually. 7-3 to you. Good to talk to you again. WB2BXO via Echo Link.
73, Frank. Have a good night. WS2N clear.
Time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater. Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5:00 a.m.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.